This is Dion Miller, sports anchor at ABC 7 in Chicago. You're listening to The Friendly Confines with Chad and Ryan.
A new episode of The Friendly Confines and a new co-host this week as Chad is on vacation. My old friend, Foster Elliott, joins us on this show. And Foster, can you believe it? I hate to bring you on for this specific episode because we're going to be talking a lot about losing, and specifically the recent 11-game losing streak the Cubs had to endure. Can you believe this is what it's come to, and this is what we're going to have to discuss?
Rhino, first and foremost, I got to thank you for this opportunity to come on your fantastic podcast. I'm tickled and silly to be able to be part of this and try to fill in as best I can in the great shoes of Chad. And yes, I can believe we're at this state talking about an 11-game losing streak. We all should have seen this starting to come with the decisions and the moves made in this offseason with a patchwork starting pitching staff, the Yu Darvish white flag trade. This should be no surprise to any of us that we're talking about a significant losing streak and that this team is most likely going to be sellers come the trade deadline.
We're going to get into that. We're going to talk about who's to blame, plus who's on the trading block and who should the Cubs potentially keep. We're going to get into all that. Plus, we got a great guest this week. Very cool to catch up with this guy, Gary Sheffield Jr. He's a sports writer with Outkick Sports. And yes, if the name sounds familiar, he is the son of the great Gary Sheffield, the former baseball player. But I'll tell you, he's making a name for himself by writing some great stuff for Outkick. So we're going to get into all that with Gary. So stick around because the Glenbrook edition of The Friendly Confines starts right now. Hi, everybody. I'm Ryan Lieber. He is Foster Elliott. And Foster, let's start in the first inning. As much as this will pain both of us, the Cubs just finished up an 11-game losing streak, something we haven't seen in a very long time, the futility of this ball club. Now, you played college baseball, and I don't know if you ever went through a losing streak such as like the Cubs did, but how difficult does it have to be for these players to go through something like that? And what did you just make of what we had seen from the Chicago Cubs baseball team over the past week and a half with this 11-game losing streak as well? The floor is yours. Go ahead and start.
Well, thank you, Ryan. First and foremost, I want to thank you for the opportunity to fill in for Chad on this fantastic podcast. I'm tickled silly to be given the opportunity to talk to you and give you my thoughts and opinions on the club and just what's going on in Major League Baseball as a whole. And yeah, you know, to answer your question, I, in all my years, never went through a losing streak that severe and that long. I think as a player, though, when you start to have continued a streak of losing like that, you know, you start to doubt yourself occasionally. It's human nature. As a hitter, you start to say, what break am I not going to get at the plate? As a pitcher, same thing. You start saying, you know, that, you know, 2 weeks ago, I was nibbling the corners and getting that pitch and getting that hitter out. And now he's barreling the ball up and hitting it in the gaps. And, you know, I think bigger picture, as we talk about this team, the issues are starting to really surface around, let's face it, the first thing is the thin rotation, the thin starting pitching. And yeah, at some point, right, the starters going 4 or 5 innings at most is going to eventually tax your bullpen. And the bullpen, man, we've talked about it. This was the heart and soul of this team in May, right? And kept keeping them going here. But in, you know, they're just, you know, your bullpen gets used, you're going to get taxed. And I think that is obviously one of the big issues that you know, plagued this team in this 11-game losing streak.
No, you're 100% right about that. And you know, we talked at the top about we haven't seen a losing streak like this in a really long time. You got to go back to 1997. And I know you and I remember that when they started the year 0-14. And, you know, that was a bad baseball team too. And I think a lot of people going into the year didn't really know what to expect from that team. And, you know, I just did not see this coming. I think nobody really did. We were literally talking 2 weeks ago about how we were potentially going to see this team add to this roster at the trade deadline because they were vying for the division title. And now, you know, we're talking about a team that, well, they're going to be selling their parts. Look, management did not do this team any favors. This team was not built to win. This team was not built to, you know, contend. And so while this 11-game losing streak is shocking because of how well they played in the month of June, or excuse me, in the month of May, you know, this is just a gut punch from that respect because, as we all know, they literally had no-hit the Dodgers prior to going on this losing streak. You don't normally see a no-hitter being thrown and then, you know, promptly rip off 11 straight losses. So it's really unfortunate. It's really befuddling. But, man, it was very painful. But I guess I just can't sit here and say ultimately that I'm shocked.
You can't be, right? You know, and that's a perfect segue into our second inning here. I mean, who's to blame? Like, who do you think is – where does the blame lie on us sitting here now talking about a 11-game losing streak that really put this ball club potentially in a sell mode, right? They're teetering right now at that, do we buy or do we sell, here sitting in the beginning of July.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I kind of alluded to it in my first answer in the first inning. I really do blame management, and I'll tell you why. Because this team, again, was not supposed to contend. This ball club played over their heads in the month of May. They absolutely just, you know, looked amazing and came out like gangbusters after a slow April. But this team, we keep forgetting, they traded Yu Darvish for basically spare parts. And then, you know, they refused to re-sign Kyle Schwarber. And, you know, you're just kind of going into the season with a patchwork pitching staff thinking, okay, well, let's see what these guys can do. Thinking that Jake Arrieta was ultimately going to be the answer. Thinking that somebody like Trevor Williams was going to be able to come out and, you know, rejuvenate his career. Zach Davies, who actually hasn't pitched that badly, but the man can't pitch more than 4 to 5 innings a start. So I just ultimately have to blame management for this, for not putting the pieces around this baseball team to ultimately allow them to contend for a division title. What about yourself?
Yeah, you said it right on the head. The Yu Darvish trade was the signature piece that said, we are not going to put all our chips in and compete this season. We will put together a patchwork pitching staff and see where, if we tread water and where that takes us. And if we're in a position in, you know, mid to late July to acquire and buy instead of sell, we'll consider that. And that's how we'll make, we might go back and get our frontline starter. You know, you also have to go back to even, you know, Theo, it is part of this with, you're clearly, the Jason Hayward contract is just absolutely still killing this team. And we're going to get into it later, but, you know, a player like Castellanos, right, who we couldn't afford to re-sign, but he's part of the problem on the offensive side where we just have too many bats that don't put the ball in play and get on base. And, you know, a guy like Castellanos, we couldn't afford to keep on this roster because we were sitting with that hefty Hayward contract. And that's a guy with 300 plus batting average and on base percentage, which this team needs more of to start to play better and be a stronger baseball team in the long run.
All right. So let's move on to the third inning now, Foster. And we talked a little bit about him. Jake Arrieta was moved to the IL with hamstring tightness. And I'm putting hamstring tightness in air quotes when I say that, of course. Jake Arrieta, who has just been absolutely struggling, his last two outings couldn't even get past the second inning. It's sad. Obviously, Jake is so revered and loved for what he did for this organization in 2015, in 2016, even in 2017. And you hate to see, you know, the aging gunslinger kind of, you know, stumble towards the end of his career. But it looks like that may be the case, in your opinion, because clearly I don't ultimately think there's really an injury that we're talking about. Are we really just trying to find a way for for Jake Arrieta to kind of go off into the sunset? And have we maybe seen the last of Jake Arrieta, in your opinion, in a Cubs uniform? What's your take on that?
Yeah, well, this is not uncommon for this team, right? We've seen this in prior years with starters and even bullpen guys being put on the 10-day IL for some injury that's really hard to understand to see because nothing visibly happened. But sometimes it is a mental reset IL move than anything else. But of course, in the big leagues, you gotta give an excuse as to why and a reason as to why you're putting somebody on the injured list. So, yeah, I think that's part of why he was put on there. And then honestly, whether he pitches another inning for this team, I think it really depends on the direction they go over the next few weeks, right? If they are in a sell mode and they need some arms, they might give him an opportunity to kind of just, you know, grind through the season and finish and throwing some, you know, continue to start for us. If not, you know, we also could see the likes of guys like Justin Steele and Keegan Thompson and Corey Abbott finally getting some looks, and that might push Jake out. And he might, for all we know, be DFA'd eventually. He is not a guy that has any trading chip, to him right now. So I can't see them finding a way to, you know, move him. So it's either, you know, they find a way to a slot for him, or they might even DFA him before the end of the month.
Isn't this such a Chicago sports move too, Foster, to see this kind of thing happen, right? Like, you bring back the superstar who was amazing for you, then he leaves, and then you bring him back and he basically is a shell of himself. I mean, I remember when the Bulls did this with, you know, Scottie Pippen at the end of his career after he had, you know, been traded, and then they bring him back. Or, you know, we saw this with the Blackhawks plenty of times, like maybe when Dennis Savard came back. I remember that routine, you know, with that situation. It just seems like I've seen this play before, and I see how it ends when it comes. Or like when the White Sox would bring Harold Baines back for the 14th time after they traded him initially. You know, listen, right. Jake Arrieta's legacy with the Chicago Cubs is cemented. He was arguably part of the greatest trade the Cubs ever made because of what he did to turn this franchise around. And what he did in 2015 was like beyond anything any of us could have expected. He had one of the greatest pitching seasons maybe of the last 20 years. That will never be forgotten. The fact that he went out and won Game 6 of the World Series in 2016 and, you know, was vital to the Cubs, you know, winning the World Series, throwing a no-hitter. These are all things that will never be forgotten. But you hate to see a guy who's clearly way past his prime continuing to defy anybody that asks him if he's past his prime and thinking that he still has lots left in the tank. And I give him credit for that. But yes, I mean, maybe he can figure it out. But to your point, a lot is going to depend on what direction the Cubs go in. And if they're going to just give, as you mentioned, some of these younger guys an opportunity, then to your point, maybe then Jake is no longer going to be a viable asset in this rotation and that we won't see him. I hate to see a guy go out this way where he had just a horrible start and that's it. Maybe there can be like one last hurrah and hopefully he can have a good pitching outing and can at least go out on a decent note if he's going to call it a career. That's the only thing I hope for. I don't know if it'll happen, but I hope maybe he'll get that opportunity.
Yeah. This is a guy, one last thing here, one note here, over a 7 ERA since the end of April. And so that's not cutting it. And, you know, something's got to change if he's going to continue to get the opportunity and be given opportunities. All right, Ryan, let's move on to the fourth inning. As we sit here and talk about, you know, the future of this team, right, it really starts with, you know, who's going to get traded and, you know, and kind of what is the looking at the current roster right now. I mean, what is your take on, you know, the key guys that are on the trading block right now if you're Jed Hoyer?
Yeah, well, it starts with the two names that we've been talking about probably all season long before the year started. And, of course, they just happen to be the two all-stars for the Chicago Cubs, and that being Craig Kimbrel and Chris Bryant. Now, from the reports that I've read from, you know, the guys that are in the know, the Buster Olneys and people of that ilk, they seem to think that Craig Kimbrel is going to get a haul. They believe that Kimbrel is a very coveted pitcher, especially with, you know, the fact that there are a lot of teams that could use a closer as dominant as he is, and that the Cubs could really capitalize on getting somebody in return, or maybe multiple players in return, if they, you know, do unload on Kimbrel. Chris Bryant, you know, certainly is somebody that I think the Cubs can get decent players in return. But again, with him being an impending free agent, with him, you know, asking for a lot of money in the offseason, with Scott Boras as his agent, what is Chris Bryant worth to another team? And those are, you know, just the first two that you think of. I think other players that, you know, are going to be in the mix include probably a Zach Davies, or include a Jock Peterson for that matter. So, and I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that Javi Baez and Anthony Rizzo could potentially be also on that list as well, pending if there's teams that are, you know, have strong interest in them. I think everybody is on the table, but if you're asking me who I think the main guys are that the Cubs are going to be looking at, it's definitely Kimbrel, Bryant, I think Peterson, and Zach Davies would be the ones that I would ultimately look at as the guys that I think could find themselves on other teams right after the All-Star break. What about you?
Yeah, I agree with that. That's a solid core there. You know, I think Kimbrel also, you know, I've been hearing, you know, some of the sources I've been reading too, says he's a great fit for the Astros, and somewhere on the American League side, and even the Red Sox for that matter. So I for sure believe he is going to be dealt. He probably has some of the strongest trade value right now. The other two to keep in mind that might be, you know, fringe, not going to give you back the return that these other guys that we've talked about would, you know, as this, you know, you look at the strength of this team is the bullpen, right? You had Ryan Tepera and Chafin, who are having great years. You might be able to get something as a prospect or two for those guys as well, as, you know, come playoff time. And as this new Major League Baseball era we live in, right, where, you know, postseason baseball isn't about a starter oftentimes going through eight innings anymore. You know, you can never have enough arms in your bullpen to grind through a postseason series.
Yeah, without a doubt. No, I totally hear you with Chafin as well, who's had a remarkable year. Going to be tough to let him go, too, because I feel like he is so perfect for the city of Chicago, and he's really ingratiated himself to the fans here. It's such a shame. He's really one of the true characters of baseball. All right, Foss, let's move on to the fifth inning now. And this might be a little bit of a tricky question because obviously, you know, it's just hard to know who ultimately is going to be the buyers of, you know, these players. But what teams do you think make the most sense for guys like Craig Kimbrel or Chris Bryant? We can probably go with those two, or, you know, any other players that you think might be in the business of trying to, you know, get some players at the trading deadline. What do you think?
Yeah. So, you know, when you look at the standings right now, you know, the NL East is a very interesting division, right? You've got the Mets sitting there. They're up at the top by themselves, and you got a bunch of other teams kind of clustered there. I think what happens in the first 7 to 10 days post All-Star break in the NL East is going to dictate a lot of what could happen in terms of interest. You know, clearly with the Mets where they're at, you know, I keep hearing KB's name is a shoe-in, like he could fall right into the Mets lap. And that's a perfect, you know, is a perfect tie for Chris Bryant. You know, if the race tightens with, you know, with the Braves and the Phillies playing better baseball, they might be buyers, and that just starts to open up additional teams. So they're an interesting play as a whole. I think all, you know, then you go to the West Coast and you got the NL, the three NL West teams, they're all in the mix for acquiring talent for a postseason run. So those, you know, those are all, I think those are very, you know, favorable for any of our, you know, beloved Cubs to go there. And then, of course, I mentioned just a minute ago, like Kimbrel from a bullpen perspective, you know, to partner with Barnes, that would make that Red Sox bullpen be a very strong bullpen. And then, you know, on the Astros, you've got Ryan Pressly, who's an all-star and has been fantastic. But if they could acquire a Kimbrel, they could move him to the Pressly to the setup role, and, you know, then slot Kimbrel in on the back end. And that would help strengthen that team on the back end of theirs. And then the A's on the West too, on the AL. I think their bullpen is not as good as last year. And of course, acquiring a Kimbrel could definitely help strengthen their pen for a postseason run later in the year.
All great calls on your part for those teams. Let me throw a couple of other names out there, or rather teams-wise, that I think would be an interesting scenario. Obviously, you mentioned the Mets for Bryant. Yes, I think that's a team that a lot of people have their eyes on. I know that the Cubs are ultimately just going to go with whoever offers them the best deal, but I also think that there's a part of this team that certainly does not want to see him in the National League so he comes back to haunt them, because we've seen that so many times with ex-Cubs coming back and just absolutely, giving it to the Cubs at Wrigley, whoever it may be. So let me throw this at you. What about the Toronto Blue Jays? That's a team that obviously is on the up, and with a team, a player like Vladimir Guerrero, and, you got Craig Biggio some there, and, they've got a lot of young talent that plays for that team. I'd be curious if they would make a run for Bryant, and not even necessarily needing him to play third base, because as we've seen, Bryant is so versatile, he can play anywhere. And then the other scenario, as weird as this may sound, I would love to see it happen if the Cubs are going to trade Chris Bryant. I would love to see them trade him to the White Sox, because it would just be cool to see Chris Bryant not only play for both sides of town, but for him to be able to stay in the city of Chicago, and also for him to have the opportunity to win a World Series with both teams, because that would be a first. There's obviously never been a player that has won a World Series with both the Cubs and the White Sox. So to me, that would be incredible to see. I just don't know if I would ultimately see that if the Cubs would deal him to the White Sox and what the White Sox would actually give up in return. As far as Kimbrel goes, yeah, I think you're right on with the Red Sox or the Astros or the A's. I think those are all good calls as well. Any of those teams could use him, and he's going to be lights out for whoever he gets traded to when it comes to closing out games. And then with the other guys that we mentioned, maybe a Jock Peterson, he's actually a guy also that has been talked about. The White Sox were interested in him initially. He decided to sign with the Cubs. Maybe there's a situation where you trade Peterson to the White Sox as well. So those are just some of the teams that I thought, might play a role in there. But it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. But I think all the teams you mentioned as well are certainly up for grabs too.
Yeah. Good takes on that. Yeah. And so we've spent, let's fast go to the sixth inning here now, Ryan. And we've spent all this time talking about who they're going to trade and who's on the trading block. Let's flip the script and say, hey, who do we want to keep? Who's worth keeping on this roster to build around, to say, they have Jed and management say, these are the building blocks for the next postseason championship team that we're going to get pulled together.
Yeah, well, it's so hard to gather, right? I mean, I think the obvious ones that I would probably hold on to, there's a few of them. One, I think Anthony Rizzo is a guy who I just feel like at all costs, you do what you can to keep Anthony Rizzo. He's going to get the statue built outside of Wrigley one day. He's this generation's Mr. Cub. He's a beloved figure in this community. I certainly think he's one of the people you try and hang on to. Javi, if the price is right, Javi's going to want Lindor money, and he's just not worth it. He's not worth it. He strikes out way too much. He clearly is an exciting player. He can make things happen, but he's going to have to probably figure out what's ultimately more important to him. If he's going to chase the money, or if he wants to just be part of a long-term plan here with Chicago, where I think the Cubs will offer him fair market value for what he's worth, but he's not going to get the kind of money that he thinks he's going to get with the numbers he's putting up this year. So I would like to see Javi back, but I ultimately don't know if he's, willing to stick around. The other person that I would hang on to too is Nico Hoerner. I definitely think you got a lot that you can, build around with someone like him. He's an excellent, excellent player. And then I would say finally, Kyle Hendricks is, I'm hoping, somebody that the Cubs hang on to long-term as well. I mean, I really like him when he's on. He's one of the best pitchers in baseball. I mean, he's not overpowering. He's kind of like, you know, this version's Greg Maddux at this point, and he's got a lot of upside. You notice I didn't mention Wilson Contreras. And while I love Wilson Contreras, the Cubs also have Miguel Amaya, their, you know, minor league catcher, who's, you know, potentially a year or two away. So maybe that gives the Cubs some flexibility to trade Wilson Contreras. So for me, I would say it's Horner, it's Javi, it's Hendricks and Rizzo. I guess those would be the guys I would focus in on to try and say, okay, let's give this another shot and rebuild. What about you?
Yeah, that's a very strong list. You know, Javi is one that perplexes me because on so many aspects of his game, we love him, right? We love the grit, the hustle, the baseball IQ off the charts compared to anybody else we've seen in many years. But yet you look at his numbers and you start to see where he lies in the spectrum of shortstops with his, you know, 220, 230 average oftentimes, and his under 300 on base percentage. Like, that isn't Lindor performance, as you mentioned, right? So yeah, part of me says because of that, right? To your point, the management will give him an offer, but not to the likings of where he thinks he might be. And I think he might need a reality check on his numbers and where they are and where they stand in the position and then with the rest of the talent pool in Major League Baseball at shortstop. I'll disagree with you on the Contreras thing. He's the one guy for me that I'd like to keep right now. I know Miguel Amaya is moving up and elevating up in the minor leagues. I think Wilson's bat and defense and what he gives you in terms of innings back there behind the plate is really in the upper echelon of Major League Baseball. He reminds me a little bit of this version of the new Pudge Rodriguez, right? Yvonne, and having the ability to be solid back there as a backstop, as well as deliver that, you know, that strong bat. And, you know, for me, I think he helps keep things solidified up the middle. And if Miguel Amaya continues to elevate, he is a fantastic, you know, he could be a fantastic trading asset for the Cubs to acquire something at some point in the next few years. If they're back to trying to acquire and add on to get major league talent, that's a trading chip for us. So I think for me, it's really, you know, Contreras is the one addition I'll add to your list that for me, I'd like to see them keep and sign long-term.
Time now for the seventh inning stretch here on the Friendly Confines. We have a great guest this week, as we always do. You can find him on Outkick Sports. He's a writer there. You can find him on Twitter at Gary Sheffield Jr. as well as Instagram, Gary Sheffield Jr. Yes, his name may have given it away. It is Gary Sheffield Jr. And yes, if you're wondering, he is the son of longtime Major League Baseball player Gary Sheffield. Gary, welcome to the Friendly Confines and the seventh inning stretch. Thank you so much for joining us. How are you?
I'm good, dude. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. I really appreciate you taking the time to join us here on the show. So let's talk a little bit, even though you're wearing a White Sox hat, which I find hilarious at the same time, we're talking Cubs. But Gary, you played college baseball, and I don't know if you've ever been involved in a losing streak that went 11 games like the Cubs have had over the past week and a half. But what do you think, being a former player yourself, what do you think the vibe was in the clubhouse while these guys are dealing with this losing streak prior to them finally breaking it? But that has to be just basically playing on your emotions for such a long time when you're dealing with that sort of losing streak.
Well, the hard part about a losing streak is that eventually you're like, well, what's the point of this whole team chemistry deal? Maybe I should start thinking of myself. That's what I always did. I remember when I was playing in college, my first college team, when I was a freshman, we lost like 15 or 16 games in a row. We were really bad. Well, there were a couple of us that were having good seasons. Like there were a couple of us committing either Division One, or some people were getting pro scouts were giving them letters and saying what round they're being selected in. It was hard to really differentiate the difference between me and then the team. So that's something that obviously as Cubs fans, they understand that the trade deadline is coming up. And it's like, okay, you've got Wilson Contreras, Javi Baez. They've got a lot of talent in Chicago. They just haven't thrown together really a solid team to throw together some wins. And the weird part is the Cubs were great earlier in the season. Chris Bryant was just raking. He's just really just carrying the team. And then now they're just not winning games. So it's just going to be difficult to realize that this is about we and not me.
Gary, you mentioned the fact that, you know, this team's on the brink now of going into full sale, fire sale mode. How many people from this core, players wise, do you expect to get dealt before the trading deadline, in your opinion?
That's, you just never know. Cause sometimes you're going to get a full fire sale to just get rid of everybody. And the fan base is going to be upset about that no matter what, unless of course you're getting back a haul, which we're seeing lately. That didn't happen. You saw with Arenado, where they basically gave up a ton of talent, a future Hall of Famer, for free. They basically paid somebody to take him. So that's disappointing. The Cubs fan base does not want to see that. If they're going to see a bunch of trades and Chris Bryant out the door, Javi Baez out the door, Contreras, that's a lot of value right there. So you're expecting top 50 talent that's going to be controllable for the next decade. If they don't get that, that's disappointing. So I really can't give you a guess because it's always random. Like baseball, you just never know what some of these front offices are doing, whether or not the person who's now taking over as general manager feels the same way about a certain prospect or a player. You just never know.
You mentioned about the returnability now of players, that we don't see the hauls that we maybe once did. You brought up the Arenado trade. Why do you think baseball's trending in that direction where we're not able to get top prospects for great baseball players in trades now?
Well, it seems like they condense the draft. So there's just less prospects to deal with. A lot of what you're seeing, the guys who are panning out at least, are international stars. We're seeing a lot of international play. I know they're putting a huge emphasis on international drafts and that type of cap and that money. I know the Yankees have been very hesitant about making trades and spending money because they don't want to forego that international money. And you saw with Jason Dominguez, and the Cubs are going to do the same thing. So yeah, it is really difficult to figure out who's buying, who's selling, when people are going to be aggressive, and when certain managers or GMs are going to say, let's turn this whole thing around and let's flip it upside down and start over. That's just difficult to do.
Is there anyone on this current team that you look at from a roster standpoint and say, you know what, we'll hold on to this player or that player, yeah, and maybe we can continue to build for the coming seasons?
To me, that's Wilson Contreras. As much as everybody thinks it's Javi Baez, I do believe that the middle infield depth around the league, you can go find another middle infielder, another shortstop. He's incredibly talented. You never know what he's going to be. He could easily be a future Hall of Famer 20 years from now. But to me, that Wilson Contreras is like the face. When I think of the Chicago Cubs, I think of him. And just knowing that when you find a catcher who can swing the bat and potentially can hit 4 or 5 All-Star games in a row, he's young, he's got that flair. He's the perfect guy that really you can have. And I know he doesn't struggle hitting velocity, which you're seeing the league really trend towards velocity. That's all you're seeing these days. Wilson Contreras is like the one guy I'd be like, look, that maybe we should hang on to that guy.
Should Cub fans feel incomplete about this era? I mean, as a Cub fan myself, I see teams like the Dodgers and the Astros, and I say they're very similar to how the Cubs were constructed. Why have the Cubs kind of stalled, and yet we're seeing teams like the Dodgers and the Astros, for instance, that continue to find that success with these young players and continuing to win, where we're in the situation we're in now with the Cubs, from your best guess?
My best guess is that they didn't have youth on their side when their run did begin. And that's something that their position players were young, and that's always a good thing. But a lot of their pitching wasn't. You saw Hendricks. I mean, Hendricks was a different type of guy, right? He wasn't a power guy. So when that fastball goes from 95 to 92, 93, well, he's not going to fall off a cliff. Or for Hendricks in particular, I mean, he's not trying to blow anyone up anyways. It's 85, 86, maybe occasionally he'll touch 89. But he was the only guy who aged well. You saw Jake Arrieta. He's been worse every year since his days with the Cubs. The Cubs probably should have just traded him when they had the chance, or just moved on as soon as possible. And I know a lot of people were like, why'd they get rid of Jake Arrieta? Well, you're getting up there in age, and this is what you see. And then you had John Lester, And he was already advanced in age. And a lot of people forget he's even still playing in Washington. And so there was just a ton of turnover in that rotation. They had a lot of big contracts on some guys in advanced age. They reminded me a lot of that New York Giants team that beat the Patriots in the 16-0 season. It was like, we're going for it. I mean, we are going for it. We got rid of Gleyber Torres for a reliever, for a rental reliever. So I believe it worked because that was the goal. They're trying to end the curse. But if they wanted sustainable success, that build wasn't going to work. And I think they need to start from scratch if they want to do that.
Gary Sheffield Jr. is our guest here on the Seventh Inning Stretch. You can find Gary's work at Outkick Sports. And of course, you can find him on Twitter, Gary Sheffield Jr., at Gary Sheffield Jr., as well as Instagram, at Gary Sheffield Jr. Gary, where does the team go from here? Obviously, I've seen so many times this team rebuilding, losing 90 plus games a year. I'd like to think we're past that, but is that inevitably where we're going with this franchise again? Is the Cubs are going to just have to restock, reload, and try to build out again, and we might be seeing some thin seasons?
It depends. It really depends what type of management you're dealing with, and I haven't gotten a good chance to see what type of deals this management will do and what kind of deals they'll execute, because sometimes managers are like, we don't want just a haul of draft guys and a bunch of prospects, 18, 19 year old kids. We want a MLB ready guy. We want to make sure we sustain some type of culture. I know Cubs fans do not want to fill up, as much as people say they love the Cubs. People are not trying to watch a team lose 95 games. They're not trying to watch a team lose 110 games. I'm here in Arizona, and I understand we're about to be in a process of a rebuild. I'm sorry, but that's going to be really difficult for me to support when you're going through a long period of time where you're not winning any baseball games. So to me, the way the Cubs are, the way their fan base is built, I don't think that you can do that, really. You're going to lose the base, and not to the sense that you won't get it back, but you're not going to sustain that. And so I really hope that this management is going to say, well, if you're going to give us one of your prospects, which it needs to be great prospects. You cannot just get rid of Chris Bryant because you don't want to pay him. You can't just get rid of, like the way that Paul Goldschmidt happened with Arizona. You cannot have a situation like that because these players don't come around every day. Chris Bryant don't just fall out of the sky. You don't get Javi Baez out of nowhere. You're just not going to find those players, because Cubs fans know you throw Happ in center field. You go, this guy's the next superstar. And then you realize very quickly how difficult it is to be at that level. And so when you finally do hit on those prospects, which they did on quite a few of them, you need to make sure if you're going to give them up, it's got to be for something that's going to help you win right now and in the future.
And our thanks once again to Gary Sheffield Jr. What some great insight about the Cubs, about baseball, and kind of where he sees the game trending right now. It was really cool to talk to him. Hey, listen, he may have the namesake Foster, but I will assure you, he is certainly making his own name for himself as a great writer for Outkick Sports. So be sure to check out his work on the website there. And he writes for, you know, Major League Baseball and the NBA, among other sports. But Gary Sheffield Jr., definitely a rising star in the world of sports journalism. So be sure to check him out. Also, want to make sure you guys know you can find me and Chad on social media. I am at Ryan D. Lieber. Chad is at the Chad Gordon. So be sure to follow us there, as well as our Chicago Cubs Facebook page, the Chicago Cubs Friendly Confines Facebook page. We'd love for you to join, be a part of the conversation, and be a part of the group of our Friendly Confines listeners, and everything that we get to chat about as well goes on the Facebook page too. And be sure to go to our website, theconfines.com. You can find the opportunity to subscribe to our podcast. And if you enter your email, again, the podcast, every new episode we have will be delivered right to your inbox, so you don't have to go searching for it. That is theconfines.com as we begin the eighth inning.
Yeah, as we move to the eighth inning, Ryan, let's talk about how upset are you, you know, to see a bunch of ex-Cubs on this year's All-Star rosters?
Yeah, It's a tough break, Foss. I mean, listen, let's break it down. We got Nick Castellanos, we got Yu Darvish, and we got Kyle Schwarber. So there's a few things you can look at. Do you ultimately think that these guys would help the team? Yeah, they probably would. I think Darvish would, you know, certainly be a guy who will put up some great numbers. Would the Cubs score for him, I think, would have been the better question. Then you got somebody in the likes of Castellanos who people are talking about, you know, an MVP now for the National League. Obviously, he would have looked great in right field. And, you know, you talked about it earlier in the podcast about the fact that because of Jason Hayward's deal, there was just really no way that the Cubs were going to be able to sign Castellanos as much as he wanted to stay in Chicago. And the Reds got him at like a bargain price. And then, of course, Kyle Schwarber, who I think so many Cub fans obviously loved him just because he was such a fan favorite. But I got to be honest, I think Schwarber needed a change of scenery. And because of that change of scenery, I think it has helped him kind of put up the type of numbers that we are now seeing that he's doing with the Nationals. I don't necessarily know if he would be putting up these kind of numbers with the Cubs like he is with Washington, because I just think everybody kind of needed a break and everybody needed to kind of go their separate ways. And ultimately Schwarber, I think, is, you know, competing the way that he is because of the fact he got a fresh start. What about you?
Yeah, I think, Ryan, I mean, I think I agree with a lot of what you said. I think the one that stings me the most is Castellanos. He is, you know, a guy that breaks the mold of what we have too much of on this team right now. And the issues that the Cubs have been facing for years of a broken offense, one that's either lives by the home run and strikes out a ton and doesn't put enough balls in play. I thought Castellanos was the perfect player for this team to start to break that mold. And, you know, he's a 300 plus hitter these days with over 350 on base percentage, give or take. You know, that is not a lot of what we have out there from our position players. And so for me, that's the one that stings the most. I think Schwarber, to your point, needed a change. And as I mentioned to you, he's a guy who was hitting 220 and 30 bombs. But, you know, but again, it was either home run or strikeout a lot with him. So I'm fine. I was fine with parting ways with Kyle Schwarber, especially with his marginal defense in left field as well. And then Yu Darvish, of course, would be doing a great thing anchoring our team for sure, our staff this year. But, you know, as we talked about, they made the decision to move him to start to rebuild and start a new look Cubs rotation. So those, you know, Darvish and Castellanos to me are the ones that sting the most seeing this year's All-Stars, but I'm not surprised by either of them.
All right, so let's finish up, Foster, in the ninth inning. And, of course, we've talked about all the changes that this team potentially could be making over the next couple of weeks. So it begs the question, you live in Chicago, you're a diehard Cubs fan, and like a lot of people, you have the opportunity to decide whether or not you're going to watch this team play in person. If the Cubs do make these moves, or even if they don't and they continue to slide like they are, even though you're a big Cubs fan, would you pay to watch this product the way that they're playing right now? And especially if they make all these trades, would you even want to take your kids to Wrigley for the rest of the year to watch this baseball team?
You know, Ryan, that's a great question. And as a father of three kids, my time and how I spend my entertainment dollars are scrutinized more than ever these days. And, you know, I'm happy to say I finally got back to Wrigley. We went, I took my two boys back in June, and I think I took it at the peak of the season with a Sunday night baseball against the Cardinals when we swept them. And I think I will live in that moment and take that as my opportunity to have enjoyed this season at Wrigley Field. I don't feel like I would probably be going back or making any special trip to go to Wrigley to bring my kids to go see this product for the rest of the summer. It's just not something in the cards for me at this point. I figure there's a lot of other ways I can spend my time and my entertainment dollars rather than watching this team.
Yeah, I can't say I fault you at all. So, you know, our listeners know I live in South Florida, born and raised in the Chicagoland area. But I was home recently and I did not go to the Cubs game because I just didn't, you know, A, feel like it was something I wanted to do at that time to watch this baseball team. And B, you know, I just wanted to make sure it had, I think they had just gone back to 100% capacity. It was like the Marlins series. And as it turned out, I'm glad I didn't go. A, because I get to see the Marlins pretty regularly. And B, the Cubs got blasted in that series by the Miami Marlins. So I'm glad I didn't go. And if I get the opportunity to come back, I don't know if I would want to spend my hard-earned dollar to watch this baseball team. The Cubs have some of the most expensive tickets in all of baseball. And while I will have the opportunity to see them when they come to Miami in August, depending on what this team looks like and how they're playing, even though, you know, Marlins games are a very easy ticket to get and a relatively inexpensive ticket to buy. I don't know if I want to watch this baseball team in person. They don't excite me. So, you know, listen, you, as you said, our discretionary funds can be used for so many other things. And the last thing I want to do is spend money on a baseball team that is not an enjoyable team to watch, and especially a team that if you're going to go to Wrigley to watch this team play, if they're not competitive and you're spending over, you know, $200 potentially on a ticket per ticket, that to me does not sound like a recipe for, you know, an enjoyable night or day at the ballpark. So I'll be the first to say, like, I love the Cubs, but I'm only going to pay for something that's a quality product. And to be honest with you, Foster, I've talked about it on this podcast before. I have no qualms having an opportunity to go to the South Side to watch a baseball game, especially with the way they're playing over there. So I'm not above that. I'm not one of those people that say, oh, I will refuse to watch the White Sox play because I'm a Cub fan. Hey, if there's good baseball on either side of town, I'm willing to go if it's going to be a quality product. And that's really the bottom line, especially as I get older.
Yeah, I hear you. I agree with you. And it's so funny. I couldn't agree with you more as I get older, as you qualified there. I feel the same way. Like, I'm starting to say, I'm remember the days of going watching bad Cub teams sitting in the bleachers as a 20-some-year-old, right? And now we're scrutinizing our dollar spend and how we're using our discretionary spending to watch. I want to see good baseball. That's what I want to see.
We didn't have to worry about a mortgage when we were working at Banner Day Camp. That's certainly the case. So,
no, we did not.
Yeah, we definitely did not. All right. So with that being said, a little shout out to the camp there, our former playground. That is going to wrap things up on this edition of the Friendly Confines. My thanks to my old friend Foster Elliott for filling in this week for Chad. And so for Foster, I am Ryan. We will talk to you next time, everybody. Have a good one, and we'll see you at the ballpark.
Don't let anyone say that it's just a game, for I've seen other teams and it's never the same. When you're born in Chicago, you're blessed and you're healed. The first time you walk into Wrigley.